The Final Fantasy Wiki podcast is brought to you by There's a new merc in town. She's like the best around. She's open for business, so come on down. Yeah, Kiri, the new merc that doesn't actually do anything. Good evening. Welcome to the Final Fantasy Wiki podcast. I'm your host, Blue Highwind. And these are the other guys.
Hi, Simcoe Mage.
Hello, Techno Obliterated.
Got lots of stuff on your plate. Got things you want out of your hair. Then you should put this merc to work, especially if you've got gil to spare. Kiri's theme is great. I love I think Kiri might be my favorite new character.
Yeah, It's close. It's close call for me. I really like Kyrie. Like, when in Remake, she was like, eh, whatever. Like, but in Rebirth, she's been brilliant.
So, if you haven't noticed, this is a podcast about Final Fantasy, and that includes a game called Final Fantasy VII, which includes a game called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Mm.
We also write a wiki about it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Though I'm going to confess, due to Google's SEO stranglehold on things, whenever I looked up anything to get through this game, I was not directed to a wiki page. I was directed to like one of 8 or 9 games media websites that are barely surviving based on, you know, guides traffic.
Yeah, so I can explain that. Right. Every time a game comes out, it doesn't matter what game it is, they always show those other websites, so you'll get like Eurogamer, Game8, IGN. They'll always go those, and the reason for that is those are editorial content, right? Those are published as if they were like, as if it was any editorial article, basically, and they're published that way, right? So always around the time it comes out, those are always boosted, and then in the months that pass, the wiki takes over. Like, the wiki becomes the bigger one later on.
Well, personally, I can't believe that fandom's AI experiment that attempts to distill the entirety of a page down to 5 questions and really wants you to think that, you know, when people are searching for Sephiroth, they really need to know that his hair is silver, isn't working for us.
Wait, so 5 questions, like... All right, so none of you are Jewish, so you don't get this, but in Passover, there's a part of the Seder where you ask 5 questions, like, how is this night different than other nights, and things like that. So that's what it does. It has this, like, weird Jewish ritual on every single page.
I guess so.
They've only run it on the pages for Sephiroth and Joshua Rosfield, which... interesting pair of choices, but whatever. We all hate it because we don't like fandom being idiots.
We don't like fandom ... Let's assume there's more to that sentence for the sake of public unity.
Yeah,
sure.
Yep. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out the end of February. So that was a really, really big, important game that was the most anticipated game of this year, according to a poll. I think it was the Games Awards that gave it that award.
I'm not sure.
It won the TGA award for that.
But as exciting and as cool as that is, and as much as you may want me to hear more of, want to hear more of me singing Kyrie's theme, we got to go do the news. And we have hard outs, so we're going to try to zoom through these news as fast as we can news them. So why don't we get with that? So what is the news of last month? Let me see. Where do we start?
I think I've got everything on hand. Although just checking, was there anything outside of the 16 and 14 stuff?
There was some very, very late things. So Final Fantasy Opera Omnia. That ended service on February 29th. That was a mobile game. It was Dissidia FFOO, was its Twitter account.
Yeah, it's one of the better ones.
Yeah, I think people actually kind of like that one, but that no longer exists. That game's dead forever. Another weird thing is Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy, that Switch game that came out last year, the rhythm game. Some people liked it. I personally didn't love it, but due to some kind of coding error, it did not work on February 29th. Like, it just, the online services just couldn't work at all because I guess they never coded it for leap years. Next up. Yeah, I guess it's all Final Fantasy 14 and 16 stuff from then. Oh, wait, one other thing. So Sakaguchi, he was talking about Akira Toriyama. And Akira Toriyama passed away this month. It was very sad for everyone here. But one of the things that he mentioned was that Dragon Quest was an inspiration for the original Final Fantasy game. Also that maybe... I don't think Dragon Ball was an inspiration. Let me get the quote exactly. Naturally, when it comes to Dragon Quest, I had a massive amount of respect for the game. I was personally a huge Akira Toriyama fan, and I read the weekly Jump magazines every month. A game designed by such a dream team felt way out of my reach, which is why I started the Final Fantasy project. I hope to at least get somewhere close to Dragon Quest. Of course, Akira Toriyama would also have worked on Chrono Trigger, which is not a Final Fantasy game, but better than most Final Fantasy games. And I say we should just cover that on the wiki. We should just cover good games on the wiki.
I'm good.
You're good? All right. I'm not doing the work.
We already cover too much as is.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, we unfortunately missed our chance to get the Posh Chocobo DoorDash bonus sales thing if you ordered from Popeyes during the period of March 7th to the 21st. You have to get the Popeye's Buffalo Ranch menu, and you get yourself a pink, very strange-looking chocobo. Could be your summon. I think this is the same model as the yellow chocobo from Final Fantasy VII Remake. Remember that weird-looking one?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff better just come to the PlayStation Store soon, because, I mean, I have summon videos to record. I'm not doing that until I have the DLC summons, because I don't have any of them for some reason. My copy of the game is missing one of the pre-order bonus one.
That was like Shiva, Ifrit, and
No. Those that you always start the game with, those the pre-order bonuses. I forget whether it's I think it was the Magic Pot.
Yeah, and Moogle and Chocobo.
Oh.
No, Moogle and Chocobo is one of the ones you start the game with. The DLC summons this time around are Magic Pot, the Moogle Trio, and Posh Chocobo. No, Fat Chocobo isn't in the game at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have them,
but I've never used them.
I think I have them, but I never click the download DLC thing. Because all that stuff is on my PlayStation 5 hard drive, so I should have been able to get that data.
You can just get them in the pause menu.
Yeah, as it turns out, you never really need them. Because Ifrit and Shiva are just better, and they start with those. And why would I use friggin' Magic Pot instead of, you know, Shiva? One of the beloved characters that have run through this series forever.
In the first remake, the utility was that in smaller arenas you couldn't summon the normal summons. Mm-hmm. So Carbuncle and the Chocobo Chick and the Cactuar could be summoned anywhere where summons could appear. That's not as much of a problem in Rebirth, because most of the arenas are a lot bigger.
Oh, that would make it so much easier to level up that 1K Sith ability.
Fucks Kate Sith. I'm not using him anyway.
Oh, so I guess that's a spoiler that Kate Sith hasn't been fixed in your eyes yet.
No, I didn't like his kit at all, so I just didn't use
him. A lot of people have really come around on Kate Sith. But spoilers for when we get to 7 Rebirth.
I guess we'll get around to that, news. We should just go to the big Final Fantasy 14 and 16 stuff. Yoshi P will now take over the podcast at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so whatever. Let's start with Final Fantasy 16, because that bit's smaller. So the Final Fantasy 16 Leviathan expansion, the Rising Tide, that's coming out April 18. The Clive and Jill go to Mysidia in the Northern Territories, you know, Jill's homeland. Stuff will happen. There's Tonberries. Clive will get the power of Leviathan, which is basically a fucking gun. they really could have given Clive more base move sets. He basically just has regular Odin and gun now.
Odin's the spear version of him, kind of.
Just like a sword with different timings and like more hitty and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mysidia is in the Northern Territories. The sky in Mysidia is blue because the developers all got sick of the pink shit.
They listened to my complaint. They listened to the podcast, I think.
Yeah, I could think of another way to fix that that involves removing it from the rest of the game.
Yeah, you could just not do
just
that.
Just make it fucking overcast.
Yeah.
This
DLC looks like it's focused around Jill because they might have listened to the fact that she has no character to speak of and is one of the worst written female characters in the entire series.
Yeah. Jill and some new woman are basically having a girl's night out, and Clive is just hanging around for the hell of it.
New woman's very tall.
Yes.
They're on that bandwagon.
They'll also be adding a new post-game mode after clearing the thing where it's like 20 stages with like roguelite progression. Getting S rank on the entire thing in the highest difficulty will unlock a secret bonus boss. There'll also be an extended epilogue to the ending with once you've completed both DLCs. You'll be able to warp immediately back to quest givers when completing a side quest. Quests that are that give stuff for Clive's the wall of collectibles in his base are now marked. You'll be able to save ability sets and just switch them around outside the combat. There will be some buffs, no nerfs. Finally remapping all controls.
I remember I had a minor control issue and I don't remember what it is anymore. It's been 6 months. Like, most of that game has already sunk out of my memory.
Also, like, they're re-adding a scene that they left on the cutting room floor that like explicitly shows Clive getting his bearer tattoo removed because some film director asked them why there wasn't a scene of that.
Do you know which film director that was?
No.
All right, I'm going to look that up because I'm curious who that is. Techno, do you have any thoughts on this stuff?
No, not really.
Did you play Final Fantasy 16 yet?
I haven't. My only thoughts are like it sounds good. And when I play it, I hope I play it with the DLC. But yeah.
And also, they are still working on the PC version. That's not going to be out at the same time as this expansion, but it'll be out eventually.
Oh, yes. There was a news report about PC optimization is slightly more difficult than I think they're thinking at this point. It's in the stages of optimization is what the quote is.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be too like difficult for them because this is the same engine as 14, and you know, 14 runs pretty good on PC. So
it is the same. I remember not knowing what engine this game was on. Then, it turned out it was just the Final Fantasy 14 engine. It's basically the white engine, in the most long-winded, complicated way. I cannot find who this film director is. I'm trying to figure this out, but
yeah, I don't know if they ever said who, but
oh, well, I'll just say it was David Lynch is the one that requested this. David Lynch, of course, is a man who needs everything to be clearly explained and very linear and logical, and not at all dreamlike or interpretive. Must have a solid foundation of all things. So, Some Color Mage, are you going to play this DLC?
Yeah, I'll play it.
Okay. Because I'm going to confess, I don't think I'm going to. It's not necessarily that I'm, like, hating Final Fantasy 16, but it's like, I don't think I can go back to that game after Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. Like, the difference is just ridiculous how much better one is versus the other, and it would just, it would be like, I don't know, after driving a car, you have to go and, I don't know, walk, but both your legs have been ripped off, so you have to, like, hobble on your legs.
It's like going from a Mercedes down to a Toyota.
No, not even that. It's like you're going from a Mercedes to a car with square wheels.
Oh.
And every time you move forward, there's a big, awful jerk as the it goes over the right angle and slams down. And you break your spine eventually, and it's just awful. Maybe it is the case that I do hate Final Fantasy 16. I might be realizing this now. I was trying to be
they're
nice.
They're aiming for completely different things, and frankly, half of the 7 Rebirth cast cannot pull off anything as stylish as Clive does, so...
Yeah,
the games are very hard to compare, I will say that. They're very difficult games to compare. It's,
I think,
you know...
Sephiroth and Clive could have, like, a male breast off. They could have that battle.
Okay, anyway,
14, right?
Yeah, Final Fantasy 14. So, Dawn Trail will be coming out a patch on 28th of June for release on July 2. Pre-orders are already out. Still waiting on information on job changes and stuff that will be coming in the next few months. What else is going on here? Because there was quite a bit, and like, there's not much to talk about specifically about Dawn Trail, because like, yeah, it's mainly just an announcement. Both the 16 and 14 stuff were at PAX. So,
yeah, there was a lot of things that came out like in one weekend.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. The cross world travel system in 14 is being expanded. So, like basically in 14 MMOs, so there's a bunch of servers. Originally, you're just stuck on the server you're playing on. Then they expanded it so that if you're on one server, you can travel to every server in the same logical data center. Then they expanded that so you could go to every server that's in the same location. So the locations being like Tokyo, Sacramento, Frankfurt, and Sydney. And now they're expanding it even further so that you can go to any global server. And they're currently testing that. Anyone outside of the Sydney data center can now travel to servers on the Sydney data center, and they're planning on having that expand to every global server when Dawn Trail releases. Okay, and the Xbox version of the game.
Oh yeah, I forgot that the Xbox version still hasn't come out. Is that what my understanding is?
That's come out. Uh-huh. That's come out. It released on the 21st.
Okay.
All of the consoles, all of the game consoles these days have this online subscription service. So you know, the Nintendo Switch Online and PlayStation Plus, and what used to be Xbox Live and is now called something like fucking Xbox Game Pass Core.
Oh god, there's so many different versions of that thing. It's so confusing.
Fucking Microsoft.
Yeah.
But anyway, like these are all required for online play. But for at least Sony, I can't remember if Nintendo does it probably as well. There is an explicit exemption in their rules for this service that if your game can only be played online, you do not have to pay for that subscription service to play the game. So you don't need PlayStation Plus to play Final Fantasy XIV on PlayStation.
I did not know that. I thought you had to buy that for every single online service.
No, like, you do get a bonus for being subscribed to PlayStation Plus on Final Fantasy XIV, but it's not required.
Is this new?
No, that's been the thing ever since it became a requirement for online, which was, like, launch of the PS4.
Oh my god. I paid for PlayStation Online fucking services for like 2 years when I got into Overwatch. I didn't need to pay for any of that. That was like $200 I probably ended up spending.
Yeah. Oh. Xbox Game Pass, on the other hand, no exception. So, in addition to the regular Final Fantasy XIV sub, you've also got to be paying for Game Pass to play the Xbox version of this game.
Oh dear. Oh, maybe it's an exception if there's a, like, you have to pay for the game to get online. Maybe if it's free to play, in theory, online, then you do have to pay for PlayStation Online. I don't know the specifics, but I feel like a moron.
But, of course, pay for the subscription. So on most versions of Final Fantasy XIV, despite Square Enix's online infrastructure still being kind of shit, it's pretty simple. You just go to Square Enix's online services, plug in your debit card details or whatever, and just pay for the thing. If you have an Xbox version registered to your account, and that's the only version registered to account, you cannot pay for things via the Square Enix online store. You have to buy door credit for the Square Enix store from the Microsoft store.
How is that still a thing? There was a whole epic lawsuit about this, about walled gardens and them trying to break through this. This has to be something that, like, is going to end soon, I think.
And like, because you know, this is the kind of scam that has been going through microtransactions and things, you cannot buy just enough credit for the cheaper subscription options.
Okay.
Like,
wow.
The cheaper subscription options are like $13 a month, and the closest pack is an equivalent of $15.
Well, if it's any consolation, from my understanding, the sales of Xbox are currently plummeting, and the entire service is doing extremely poorly. It's facing something of an existential crisis. So maybe this will only affect like three people.
And there's another thing that's added on that isn't horrible, but just really funny. So to celebrate the release, they're putting on a contest of some fucking Twitter sweepstakes thing where the prize is a Final Fantasy XIV themed Xbox Series X.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That looks sick, actually.
Yeah, except that Xbox doesn't work. It's a display model.
Wait.
So they send you that and another Xbox Series X that actually works.
No way, you're making that up.
Wow.
That's what it says. One winner from eligible North American territories and one winner from eligible European and Oceanic territories will be selected to win the below prize package. One custom-designed Final Fantasy XIV branded Xbox Series X console. Please note that this item is non-functional and for display only.
Jesus.
One retail Xbox Series X console.
Oh, that's amazing. That's even better than, like, do you remember? I think there still are collector's editions of games that you can buy that don't come with the actual disc of the game.
Final Fantasy XIV actually does that now, but that's because they don't.
You don't really need a disc
anymore.
Yeah, discs are increasingly more of a. Well, they're basically just a key to get on the online service. So.
Yeah. So, like, if you can buy like a PC collector's edition box that contains a code, but they also sell a collector's edition box without a code, in the event that you're buying it, if you're buying the expansion from the PlayStation store, you don't need an extra code for that.
Yeah. Like, I have Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on disc. Two discs.
Mm-hmm.
I went out of my way to get the physical edition, but I really have no idea why I did it. Like, honestly, I could have just bought it online and just downloaded everything. It's a completely unnecessary step. I paid like $100 extra for a PlayStation 5 that reads discs, just because I'm like weird and old fashioned.
Yeah.
Same, and I download everything. I don't have a single PS5 game on disc.
I've
got plenty of PS5 discs here. So.
I have Yakuza 8 sitting right underneath Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I'll get to that eventually, I guess. Some other Final Fantasy 14 things I saw. There's a Torgal mount and like a baby Torgal mascot.
The Final Fantasy 16 collaboration that's happening on April 2. Clive's there. You're gonna fight here for it. They've added a lot of 16 songs to the game, and also you can get two Torgals.
Yeah,
you get the puppy Torgal minion and the adult Torgal mount.
Also, it is to my understanding the next expansion, while also being Mexico and also being Cyberpunk 2077, it's also going to be, at least this is theorized, Final Fantasy IX themed.
That was pretty obvious with one of the new jobs basically being based on Zidane and the Cyberpunk city being named Solution 9, which is one of
his
moves.
Yeah, I think one of his mid-tier limit breaks. I don't think it's his best one.
Yeah, there are a ton of references to older games all over 14, but each expansion like leans towards one in particular. So like Heavensward was the Final Fantasy VI influenced expansion, and Stormblood was the V influenced expansion. Depending on where you look, Shadowbringers could be either 3, 7, or 8. Endwalker is so goddamn Final Fantasy IV inspired that the post Endwalker content would basically just beat up all the villains from 4.
You know what I'd give them money for? I'd give them money if they make an expansion and it's based on Xenogears. I'd give them all the money in the world.
Just do it.
Just like really go into Square Enix's back catalog, considering no one's ever going to touch any of this stuff ever again. So, you know, might as well just go that way. Like, we were lucky enough to get a Live Alive remake, but I don't think we're ever going to see anything Xenogears related again, because the Xenogears guy doesn't work at Square Enix, so he's not going to push for it.
Yeah.
Let's get an Einhander something or another. Oh, you know what? No more is there. Let's get a Bouncer-themed Final Fantasy XIV expansion.
It's the...
You know what?
The Bouncer.
Okay. I don't know what our bet's going to be, but we have to have a bet where the losing condition is you have to play the Bouncer.
Oh my god.
The next bet that comes up, that's got to be the losing condition. You have to either play the Bouncer, or you have to at least watch a full playthrough of it. So you can experience whatever the hell that game is.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, I do have one other... are we done with 14?
I think that's everything that was important, yeah.
Okay. I forgot to mention this with Opera Omnia closing down. This is a very cool story that The Verge reported. There is a fan that spent 3 years, 2 terabytes of hard drive space, and translated, like, transcribed all 100, I think he saved them all 100 hours of cutscenes. So, wow. Dissidia, Final Fantasy, Opera Omnia does continue to exist. Archival way. That could be
what
the other losing thing for a bet. You have to watch all 100 hours of that.
Yeah,
what was this guy's name that did this?
There's some really good moments in it. Like,
know about Opera Omnia's story is there's one scene where Fang and Vanilla are very obviously being a couple, and Steiner's also said, "Oh, they must be very good friends."
Yeah, there's some really cool moments in it. Like, there's some cool moments in it because you get to see people interact that you'd otherwise never see interact, right? But I mean, that aside, like, there's half the cutscenes are like No, I won't join you. One battle later. Oh, just kidding. I'll join you. Right. And so it's like some of it's good and some of it's filler. So $100 is not worth it.
This guy's Twitter handle is at Hattic Talk. He's the man that did all this work.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Okay.
Full respect to that man or whatever they are. Sorry for assuming your gender at Hattic Talk person. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I think that's all the news, right? We've newsed ourselves out.
Looks like.
Yep. So now we can finally get to what everyone's been waiting for and possibly have been fast-forwarding on their podcatcher to get to, which is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I was gonna do like a swoop or like a boom goes the dynamite or something, but I don't have anything. There's no jokes to be made. We just gotta do it.
How good is this game?
There was a moment playing this game where the thought crossed my mind, and this is a thought that does not come easily to me because I've been playing Final Fantasy games for literally 20 years at this point, that this might be the best Final Fantasy game they've ever made. Now, I don't know if it still stands that high. Like, that's a hard place for it to stand, and I'll have to mull this over for years and argue within myself. But it is a damn good video game.
I'm the same way, man. Like, this is the first one that's come out, right, as long as I've been... So, I'll be real. I've been a fan since, like, 2011, so something like that, right? You know, and I went back and played all the old games. Right, you know, this is the first one that's come out since then where I've genuinely been like, oh, this is a masterpiece. You know, this is like just a really just, I wouldn't even say that about 7 Remake was that good. 7 Remake was a really good game, but it was extremely flawed. And don't get me wrong, 7 Rebirth is not without its faults, and we'll get to them, but 7 Rebirth is not without its faults, but it's so fucking good. Like, it's a genuine masterpiece, right? It's going to be hard for it to top 6 or 12 for me, but I think it's up there. If it hasn't topped them, it's up there. It's so good.
Song Power Mage?
Yeah, like, I think it does top them. Like, I think this is actually just the most fun I've had to do. With the series, period, and that's amazing that they managed to reach that bar with a goddamn open world game. I don't like open world games that much.
Right.
And so much of the open world content is like, I could imagine the critic brain of being like, oh, this is just the Ubisoft tower, collect all the little arrows, nonsense crap. It's the most tedious, pointless filler stuff, and I'm like, yeah, but I want to do all of it for some reason. I just want to do all this shit. I don't know why.
We're on the wiki. We're fucking nerds. So, you know, the half of this stuff rewards us with you know, the Chadley's egg mode telling us about, you know, the history of local wildlife or you go to the big crystal deposits and you get to get the backstory of this world. Yeah, yes, of course we're eating that shit up.
I know, man, like, oh, it's just, like, they've made the most complete world since Ivalice, easily. It might even be more detailed than Ivalice at this point. It's definitely more detailed than Spira now. Like, it's like, holy fuck.
How
well everything is thought out.
They have been adding a lot of, like, history and backstory to this world that, like, the original game did not have. Like, the moment they start talking about the old Republic that Shinra overthrew, I'm like, oh my god, they're adding history. Here we go. I'm fanboying out right now. Please, add, like, 600 years of nonsense backstory. I'll do it for you. I'll write all the stuff, Square Enix. I'll just write, like, 10,000 words of a document about the history of Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like, this game is the best reviewed Final Fantasy since 9, and... I was, I might have said this on the last podcast, but I was a little cautious about that because I was like, well, I remember when Spider-Man 2 breached the 90s on Metacritic, and then it came out, and there's a lot of people that still prefer Spider-Man 1. No, I don't think you'll find a single person who prefers 7 Remake over 7 Rebirth, right? Like, 7 Rebirth is just that good. It's, It's the Final Fantasy that they should have made like for the past 10, 15
exactly.
years. Right. But, and I'm like, better late than never.
Yeah.
But at least we've got it now.
It's like, in some ways, it's the Final Fantasy they've been working towards for the last 15 years. But let me put it to it this way. Too. All right. So I have traditionally been a hater on this podcast and also on like the Let's Plays we used to do. Like, this has just been the role I played. I basically hated everything past Final Fantasy XII. There have been a few games here or there that I'm like, oh, yeah, that one's good. But, like, for the most part, I'm just pure hater, always be hating.
I remember you being, like, 70-30 on 7 Remake, if I'm not mistaken.
I was kind of cool on it because they did address basically every complaint I had about that game in this one.
Right.
They fixed the combat extremely. But what I'm trying to say is, like, this is the first game, the first Final Fantasy game I've played in a very, very long time that feels like it's meeting the promises of what Final Fantasy traditionally was back on the Super Nintendo and PlayStation 1 and up to basically 12, where it's like, this is this giant world full of adventure where, yes, there's ridiculous melodrama happening, but also it's this wonderful mixture of tones, of characters interacting, of romance, of comedy, of all this endless potential, and also done at the highest degree of video game art, which is something that so difficult to do at this point. I look at this game and the things they achieve, the scenes that they've done, it is decadent, is how I'd put the production. Like, it is something, like, I almost feel guilty that I put this much work into the game, because I'm like, there's no way that this makes logical sense. Like, I hope you guys didn't kill yourself making this game, but also, like, oh my god, you did the thing. You remade Junon, right. And it looks so damn good.
Yeah, and they were developing Rebirth and Part 3 in tandem, So, a lot of this work is largely making a game that can withstand basically doing the same open world twice. And even then, it hasn't gone all the way, because it's an interview with the director after launch. And he said, one of the first things we've got to do is we've got to make the world we created compatible with flying around on the high wind.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see that. Like, I've always had this fantasy in my head where when you do the high wind, it'll be kind of like how a plane is in real life, where, like, it's so high up that you can't really see below you. And then when you come down below you, then you'll actually get to, like, you know, one of those open areas like we saw, right? And I've always had an idea that it would be somewhat like... I'm just really curious to see how they do it, but I'm not at all worried about the next one based on this. I'm not remotely worried about it, because they... With the exception of maybe two things, every single area in this game is improved over the first, right? And I can't wait to see what they do next.
To add a cloud to our gigantic silver lining, I do have two complaints. One is that I think the pacing around the Costa del Sol area, the coral area, is really rough, and there's so many side quests that I think it's kind of killed a few campaigns of people. We're willing to get through that part.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I think, like, if you do the Aerith quest immediately after doing all the quests with all the dumb side quests and the shops and stuff on the beach, you could just exhaust yourself playing nothing but mini games for, like, 3 hours, and then eventually you lose track of the game. I think that pacing's kind of bad. My other complaint would be...
Yeah, they could probably put that in 12.
My other complaint would be the ending. I think the ending is not good at all.
Oh, well, I don't think anyone's going to disagree on that. Yeah. I think, yeah. Well, there's two areas that I think 7 Rebirth was not better than 7 Remake, right? The ending, I think the ending in Rebirth is either worse or just as bad as Remake. So, but I never expected anything different. I knew they were going to throw a giant fucking giant boss gauntlet in a place that it didn't belong. They did the same thing in Remake. I'm not shocked that it happened again. Right. The other one is the music, and that's not because I think the music in Rebirth is worse. I just think the music in 7 Remake was so, so good that this is just as good.
Oh, okay.
Right? I think they're both level, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because... When I was playing through 7 Rebirth, I've beaten the game, and I'm on hard mode now, right?
Oh,
I'm,
good for
I'm
you.
not
I
done with
haven't.
hard mode yet. Yeah, I'm not done with hard mode, but I'm like most of the way through it, right? And when I originally played it, I was thinking like, oh, they're reusing a lot more tracks than they did in Seven Remake, and you know,
well, this is a much longer game than Remake. It's like,
well, that was the first thing, and the second thing was I was realizing like, no, like a lot of it was like updated version. I feel like more. I might be wrong about this, but more of the tracks in Rebirth are remakes of the Uematsu tracks, whereas more of the tracks in Remake were completely new tracks, right? And of the completely new tracks in Rebirth, I love all of them to bits. Like, you know, the Gongaga soundtrack. Fucking hell, that's such a good theme.
Stamp theme.
The
Some Color
stamp
Mage.
Theme.
Some Color Mage, could you give me the chorus on the stamp theme, please?
Oh, it's like, go on, little stamp, or something like
that. No, it's bow wow wow, bow wow wow.
Oh, that bit.
Yeah, that
bow,
bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Kyrie's theme.
Also, the fact
heard,
that it's
a beautiful rendition
of battle theme remix.
Yeah, they gave a battle theme remix. That's what I mean about this game being so decadent. It's like, all right, here's a dog that shows up in two side quests. And they've written it an overworld theme and a battle theme.
I know, man. Oh, it was like, oh. It was, that was such a good theme. Yeah. But my favorite theme of all.
Yes, yeah. Oh, what's your favorite
theme
of all?
It's funny because I felt like I have such conflicted feelings about this whole bit, right? I'm talking about Coral Prison, right? Mm-hmm. And I have such conflicted feelings about it because... Here's the thing. Barrett was always my second favorite character in the original, right? Which is why I love that he's had such a glow up in 7 Remake and now Rebirth. Like, I love that more people are, like, discovering how good of a character he was. Because I always, you know, I was always, the biggest fan in the world of Tifa and Barrett. And then everyone else around me was like, no, Cloud, Sephiroth, Aerith, they're way better.
Vincent.
And then now they've had, like... Yeah, a lot of people love Vincent, too. Yeah, but, like, I've just loved to see how much those two characters have been more appreciated since Remake and Rebirth came out. So I was always going to be very critical of Coral Prison because that was like that and Cosmo Canyon were my favorite parts of the story in the original, right? So I was always there was basically no way you could have done it where I would have liked it 100% and would have been like happier with it, right? So I have such conflicted feelings because even though in Coral Prison, right, in the original, you get down there and it's this glum, dark, like, depressed, moody, like, oh, everyone's down on their luck here and, you know, we feel like we failed. Has Barrett gone and killed a bunch of people? We don't know, right? Yeah. And I missed that wasn't there. But with that said, when fucking Gus shows up, and there's that one theme where, like, it sounds too nice, it's only Gus. And then, like, that theme, I was like, fucking hell, this is so cool. And I'm like, it's so cool, but I wish it wasn't here. Like, I want it in the game. I just don't want it here. I want to be depressed right now.
Yeah.
Why did I just say I want to be depressed right now?
Sometimes you want to be depressed. Like, you want, you know, sometimes heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Yeah, exactly, right?
No, no one gets
it's like
it.
It's like I don't know, it's like I wish it wasn't here, but I love that it's here anyway. But also I don't want it to be here. Like, and it's my favorite theme cuz it's so catchy. And then there's a bunch of battle themes of it when you do the Tifa mission in chapter 12 that takes place there.
Oh, I don't think I did that one, shit. I didn't know there was
so,
one there.
There was
Okay.
It's when what's his face comes back from 7 Remake, guy who was looking for who Corneo took his wife, like that guy.
Wait,
he comes back.
What? Who are you? Corneo's wife?
No. Corneo took his fiance. What's his name?
Wait. Oh, this is Corneo's like silver-haired Riku-looking lackey guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he wasn't in this
guy.
Game. You're right. I completely forgot about him.
Yeah, he's in one of the late game side quests.
Okay.
He's only in one quest, and it's the Tifa quest. Yeah. Oh, by the way,
Yeah.
That whole, I found out, that whole arena there, yeah, it takes place in, like, the pit.
Yeah.
You know, where you go down the pit.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, in the original game.
Yes, it's there, that you could go down there.
In the original game, you could go down there, but you can fight this enemy that's not supposed to be there, because it's like a test, it's called Test Zero.
Yep.
It's an enemy that's not supposed to be there. They left it in. It was like a bug or whatever, right? And the developers said, we're going to make a whole arena based on that, just so, for an excuse for you to be able to fight a monster that we're going to call Test Zero. It's like,
it's the exact same type of enemy that Test Zero was in the Japanese version.
Like, yeah, because I think Test Zero was a pyramid in the English version.
Yeah, in English they replaced all the test enemies with pyramids. But yeah, in Japanese, Test Zero was one of the dogs.
Oh, that's so cool, man!
By the way, speaking of the original, I have to mention this because this is very important to me. They renamed Mr. Coates, and I'm really mad about that. I know his name's Gus now, but Mr. Coates was a name I loved. I loved that his name was Mr. Coates.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That being said, about like Test Zero, in this game where they have, you know, slavishly recreated tons of enemies, even the most obscure references, that the Maloceros, which is what they've retranslated Heavy Tank to, 0 out of 10.
Oh, is that in the game?
Where is my fucking Triceratops with tank tread?
Yeah, he's not in.
Yeah.
He's not in yet.
No, he is in the game. It's the Maloceros, but they just use, like, the kind of jewel horn design for him.
Oh, that's...
What? Yeah. Oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Well.
Maybe, you know what, they still have one more game to make. Maybe that's where he's going to be.
They do. That's true. So the music was, like, just as good as Seven Remake, in my opinion. Some would argue better.
And I actually thought it was better. Yeah,
that's fair. That's completely fair to say it's better. Like, you know, I'm really happy with the music, regardless. So, let's go through.
Oh, speaking of music,
go through different topics. Go on.
One thing I got to say about music. What's wild about this game is like, just what I mean about like extravagance in music. I have to gush about this again because they go to, like, such ridiculous lengths with how many tracks are on this OST. There's things you hear one time, and it's like, why did you do this? Yep. There's a full choral version of Rufus's March that you hear once, and it's not even during the parade part. It's during the scene before the parade. And then there's a choral version of, I think, Aerith's theme that shows up during the ending sequence, where people are, like, singing. There's lyrics, like Latin lyrics or something. And you only hear it for, like, one part of the whole thing when you're fighting, well, spoilers, I guess. It's not, I don't know, you're fighting nonsense is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and also, they have Gold Saucer remixes for every character's theme, right? Depending on who accompanies you. So there are themes that you might not even hear. In fact, you'll only hear one of those five themes.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Depending on who accompanies you. Yeah, yeah. But I love the Tifa one because it's so cool. It's like the ding 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 ding. I love that shit.
Okay, so you brought up one of the I have a semi organized at this point where I have specific conversation points we have to get to, and since you've already brushed up against it, we have to talk about the business, the very important business, which is who did we get in the Gold Saucer date?
I've got Tifa twice.
Okay. I got Tifa twice.
I wasn't specifically trying for anyone, so I ended up with Aerith.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Did you get a kiss at the end, though?
I did.
No, the kiss is just for Tifa. Like
only
the,
Tifa.
Okay. Like even if you get intimate with anyone else, it's only Tifa that gets a kiss.
You could get intimate, but no kissing on the lips, except for Tifa.
I think the Cloud and Aerith one is like close. Question mark? I don't remember.
I've watched all these scenes. They hold hands very, very heavily. It's lewd. It's lewd as hell.
Yeah.
I did not get a kiss in my Tifa.
I mean, also just like the fact that they actually turned the Barrett days into something actually serious. Like, you know,
it's a good scene.
Joke. the joke that it was in the original one. It's actually like part him trying to come to terms with you know, the him being responsible for getting everyone else in Avalanche killed, and part him just trying to help Cloud, you know, possibly like just get with probably Tifa, but yeah, just help Cloud, just give him some solid dating advice. And then also, like, you know, there's the Red 13 date, which is good. The Yuffie one is good. The Tifa and Aerith ones, I mean, yes, they're changing context a bit, but they're already pretty good.
Well, so with the Tifa one.
The Kate Sif one is incredible.
Oh, yeah, that one's funny as fuck.
Well, that you end up with the Tifa... all the various hanger-on characters.
Kate Sif ropes Sid and Vincent into helping, and then, like, in the Sky Wheel, Vincent falls asleep while Kate Sif and Sid start arguing about whether or not this was a good idea.
So, with the Tifa one, it's interesting, right? So, with Tifa in the original, what happens is she spends the whole time basically saying, hey, Cloud, I want to say something to you. Aerith would be able to say it, but I can't. I don't know what to say, right? And there's two interpretations of that. The one interpretation is the obvious one, which is she's trying to say, Cloud, I love you. Let's go have babies together, right? And the other interpretation is...
Is that really what she's going for?
Well, whatever. Like, okay, the other interpretation is she's trying to say, Cloud, you're not the real Cloud, and the thing you said in Calm was a load of bullshit, and, like, you know, it doesn't align with my memories, right? So there's two interpretations of that, but what they did nicely in the Gold Saucer in Seven Rebirth was they include both interpretations, right? So they include both of them as two different correct ones, because they mention the thing about Zack, right? They do mention that in the Tifa date. And then they have them kiss at the end. So it's like, they're saying there's no ambiguity this time. Both are correct. Which I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah. I also do kind of like that Cloud is actually... There's actually... Yeah, I mean, he does definitely get a lot worse afterwards. But there is signs that Cloud is starting to chip away at, like, his mental problems. Because, like, you know, at the beginning... They kind of lay it on thick that Tifa knows that Cloud's interpretation of events is wrong, and but later on, Cloud starts thinking, "Wait, Zack had to have been there. Maybe he's that guy that I thought died, and like he's still wrong." But Tifa is just trying to gently massage him towards the truth.
Yeah, I do really like what they did with that. Right.
Cloud's development during this game—it's both positive and negative. Though at that point we're definitely going into spoilers element.
Yeah, it just makes it so much more heartbreaking towards the end where I mean, we'll talk about the ending further, but he gets even worse than he was ever in the original game.
So it's really cool. So another thing I'll say is, like, Aerith's date was much the same as Tifa's, where in the original Aerith's date the whole thing was, I want to find the real you, which is another hint of, you know, hey, Cloud, you're not the real Cloud. You are the real Cloud, but you've got some Zack in you, right? And again, they do both interpretations for the Aerith one. They have, you know, they get, like, quite intimate together, but they also have Aerith, you know, kind of hinting at, you know, the Zack thing. But, yeah, I really like how they did it. So here's one annoying piece of discourse about the original game. Is this whole thing of, like, why didn't Tifa just tell Cloud he was wrong, and then we could have avoided the whole shit, right? We could have avoided the whole thing, we could have skipped. And it's such a dumbass interpretation, because it's like Tifa didn't know that what she believed was correct, because remember, this woman had, you know, she'd been knocked out unconscious after that whole event, and who's to say that her memories were correct either? And they hint about that, because in this version, you know, Cloud's getting suspicions of, hey, maybe you're not the real Tifa. Maybe I'm the real Cloud and you're not the real Tifa.
Because, then of course there's the early scene that had me almost spit out my drink.
Where the ending of the Gaga dungeon?
No. When they're up on the roof and they're having this conflict. And then Tifa shows Cloud her scar and she lifts up her shirt. And I'm like, oh my. Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
That was a few minutes after Tifa and Aerith have a massage scene. Or like blind massage scenes. I'm like, all right, I'm spitting my drink out all over the floor at this point. Goddamn game.
Yeah, and well, that's the other thing I like is that, you know, Aerith and Tifa are now talking about it. The whole Zap thing.
I was thinking of the ending of the Gongaga dungeon, because I think that's the first time when this game I actually was thinking, holy fuck, they actually went there.
Oh, yeah, right. The Gongaga dungeon where Cloud... Yeah, I guess we should maybe save that for spoilers, or are we... I guess our spoiler wall is basically just like the very ending of the game, because there's a big mystery that's running in the entirety of the production of this game and what it's promising, and really the entirety of the metafiction stuff that the first game was setting up, which I think is not handled terribly well, but maybe we should save that for later.
Like, I agree.
Along the way, we can talk about the scene. So, like, but there's this...
Like, depending on how long this takes, we might need to... leave it for next week or something.
Yes.
But I'll say regarding that, like, the Gongaga scene was the first point in the game where I realized, like, how much I was glad the Whispers weren't in this time, right?
Oh, but then they come back with a vengeance, don't they ever?
Right. It's like, you know, in...
Oh, wait, they're in the Gongaga scene already. They're flying all around in that location.
Yeah. So, like, in 7 Remake, you know... There's like several scenes where you look at them and it's like the Whispers are kind of like saying, no, we have to correct the course so it does the correct thing. And I'm just like, oh, fuck off. Right. You know, or I didn't realize how much I was annoyed by them being there until I played 7 Rebirth, where they're not in it up until Gongaga. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well,
and then when they are back in it, I'm like, oh, fuck off. But then even then, even when they came back in Gongaga, right, that scene was still... I think it's the first scene in 7 Rebirth that, like, deviates from the original at all. And it's still just a really, really good sequence. Like, I really enjoyed the Gongaga dungeon. It was not at all like the original. But when you think about it, the original visit to Gongaga is literally, like... It is, like, fuck all happens. You know, it's literally just that... joke scene with the Turks, and then they meet Zack's parents. And now
there's an optional Gongaga Turks fight, place. I think, in there.
It's the whole of Gongaga is optional. Yeah, you can just like skip past it and go straight to Cosmo Canyon. And now it's an actual thing, and it's like one of the most pivotal points in the game. And I actually really enjoyed Gongaga this time.
I'm gonna say Cloud fully Sephiroth'd out, killing the Shinra soldiers is an all-timer great scene.
Oh.
It really so says good. how distinct these characters are, that Cloud's movements immediately just, oh my god, that's Sephiroth right there.
Yeah, that's right. Fucking incredible. Like, yeah, Gongaga has excellent story scenes. It's the fucking worst to navigate, but yeah, it's got... There's just a lot of brilliant stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. It's also graphically the most beautiful place in the game.
Okay, this is a kind of another thing I was talking about, of like conversation points or whatever, but like, I already said what I think is one of my favorite moments, but do you have like a favorite moment in this entire game or a favorite fight you want to go and highlight?
Who's going first?
Well, favorite fight for me falls too far into spoiler territory, but just thinking about story moments that I particularly enjoyed. There's that bit in Junon where, like, you're walking around and you see Rude go into a bar.
Oh, yeah, the bald people bar.
Oh, yeah.
And then you follow it in and everyone's bald. And I think Rude calls it... I think the way Rude says mobhead, I think he just called us a slur.
Well, if you have hair, your head is a mop.
Yeah, still, but the way he says it.
Mophead might possibly be a slur in some cultural context whatsoever. He doesn't mean it that way, all right? Rude is an ally.
Yeah.
I think my favorite single fight in this... You know what's interesting? I really like the combat in this game, but I don't know if there's any one boss that I think is, like, a standout awesome thing. No. My favorite part is... Or, like, one part I want to talk about that's really great is when you're leaving Junon and you have the 7th Infantry following along with you, and these guys are the ultimate bros of friendship because they all implicitly realize, wait a second, this guy is the terrorist, but... He's part of our crew. He's one of us, even if he was lying.
Oh, so
and we're
going
to fight along with him all the way to the end. And then you end up as Cloud alone with these 5 completely useless little ducklings that you have to keep alive.
Oh, so good.
I expect that in part 3, they're going to be the soldiers manning the submarine.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. In the original, in the original, they were the soldiers that manned the submarine. And you could actually kill them. Which I would never, I would never dare do that now.
No.
They are my darling children, and I love them, and I did all I could to protect them from all things that are wrong. Also, the Shinra Commander lady is, look, I'm not saying I'm pro fascism, but sometimes you can convince me with certain characters. This is a joke.
Okay. Fucking up.
You know what? I can fix her, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite moment. Does it have to be a fight or does it have to be like story moment?
It could be anything, really.
Okay, right. So, I'm gonna say probably my favorite, like. My favorite thing in the main story, I have a favorite side quest as well, right?
Oh yeah, that's our next topic.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. All right. So my favorite thing in the main story, like I could cheat and just say it's Gongaga because the Scarlet fight was, you know, that was my favorite fight. Like my favorite enemy that I enjoyed fighting was the Scarlet giant robot. Like I really enjoyed that. You know, maybe it's because, like, I always like monk characters, and so any fight where you force me to use Tifa is a great fight. But, I think my favorite moment in the story, right, and I might say it's Gus, but again, if it weren't for the fact that I wish it was some other place, I would say it was Gus. But, my favorite thing... like just period in the story that nothing like ruined it or whatever, if that makes sense, was probably the dolphin again with Priscilla,
the dolphin minigame,
right? Yeah, the dolphin, like when you're piloting the dolphin, and this time it's a lot of fun. You know, in the original it's like, oh fuck, this stupid ass CPR minigame and this dolphin that's impossible to control. And this time, the dolphin is fun to control. It has that, like, funny little, like, beach theme in the background while you're doing it.
And you it get just, to like, play made the, that whole... You get to play the squid jet ski game from Super Mario Sunshine.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, this is so much more fun this time. Like, I really enjoyed basically everything that happened in Junon. Everything that happened in Costa del Sol, right? And yeah, again, like, you know, I would really enjoy Corel if it wasn't like, I just, like, the whole, you know, going around and doing stuff for Gus thing, I would enjoy it if it was at any other point in the game.
Yeah, it
like,
does break up what is a serious dramatic arc by having to go do all this nonsense.
Right, exactly. It's like, and if also, that like, came even... at another time.
Like, even the party isn't taking Gus's part that seriously. Like, you know, he's trying to be an intimidating villain, you know, and, like, as Valis Cornag is like, oh, yeah, if you don't come back, I'm going to sell the ladies in your party to...
Yeah, we don't need and, that. Yeah, no thanks.
And the rest of the party is like, if something happens, we'll just beat the shit out of all of them.
Right.
Yeah, they all get kidnapped so easily when you get down there, and it really is kind of embarrassing. It reminds me of classic RPGs, where, like, no matter what your party level, there's a scripted part where everyone has to get kidnapped.
Like, yep. I feel like that arc wasn't just that well done in general, because also, like, you know, the Dine
fight, that was not good.
The the bits before the fight were fantastic. But after the fight, the recontextualization of his death from you know, like in the original, he kills himself. In this, he gets just a bunch of Shinra soldiers come show up and start trying to gun everyone down.
I think there's so many problems with that scene, like in terms of like everything. I think like the whole thing is fumbled. Because first of all, like,
well,
when you're presenting that scene originally, it's like this character is quote unquote crazy, and I mean crazy in like a literary way, not in terms of an actual mental illness, and that's maybe better, or like I don't know if that's better, or that was more acceptable to do in 1997. Now it feels exploitative and just this character babbling to himself. It's just like, oh, I just kind of feel weird about this. But then the fact that you have a boss fight with him where they turn him into friggin' the end of Akira, where he's summoning all these Dr. Octopus things from, like, the junkyard. It's this ridiculous, like, tone. I don't know what tone we're going for. This is supposed to be a serious Barrett confrontation scene, and you have this preposterous sci-fi thing happening. It's a complete mess. I think they totally blew it.
With that, I'll say, like, I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought that, like, because for me, like, that was such, there was such a good scene in the original that I wouldn't be happy whatever you did with it this time. So I'm glad other people agree that it wasn't all that this time. But for me, like, the bigger problem wasn't that, you know, I didn't care about that for a boss fight perspective, you know, because I still really love how John Eric Bentley, like, how Barrett's voice actor, I think he performs brilliantly in that scene. And I don't think there's any massive problem with the dialogue specifically, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I was really enjoying it. But so I was really, really enjoying it, right? Right when Dine... I've played this scene twice because I'm in hard mode. When Dine passes away, I can't help but tear up.
Oh, right? I didn't feel much of anything, to be honest.
That's fair enough, but it happened. It hit me both times, and I was like, "Fuck!" Just because of how well it's voiced. And then right after that, this scene.
That's the other problem. They threw boss fight from Rocket Town here into this part of the game. You have this ridiculous comedy character. Why is he here?
Actually, the biggest problem of skipping Rocket Down, like, they'll obviously be in part three as well, but the biggest problem with skipping that is that we no longer get the end of the Palmer boss fight where he gets Izakai'd.
I know.
I mean, they still might do that. That scene could still be
like,
here.
The whole fight is like, it's exactly the same. I feel the same way about it as I feel about Gus, where it's like, I love this fight, but why is it here? If you put it any other part of the game, it would probably be my favorite fight because it's so much fun. The theme is fun as hell. And then there's the part where, like, Dharma steps out of the robot and he does the Nina, Nina. I'm like, fucking hell.
You could just give the moment more time to breathe. Like, instead of going straight into it, you could have him attack Coral Prism for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Or do more to establish his character instead of just having him be this guy that spouts nonsense, you know? I also think cinematography, the way that they shoot this scene and actually many of the sad scenes that are recreated from the PlayStation 1, I don't think they did a great job of it because, like, the way the PlayStation 1 does it is it's just one shot, which is how a lot of them are done. It's long takes, but it really lands because there's no music. It's just the wind blowing, and they're in the foreground. There's a long distance away, and here they're like, oh, they're cutting back and forth, and like, this doesn't really land. The Red 13 sad scene doesn't land. The sad scene is a mess. I didn't think so.
That's fair. I think there's nothing wrong with that. With that opinion, like, you know.
Yeah, but the scene we can't talk about yet, that they didn't quite get that one right either. But there is one particular super sad scene that did actually make me cry, which is like, you know what I'm talking about, probably. That's also for spoilers, I guess. Or you know what? Maybe that's early before spoilers. There's a Aerith flashback scene where you play as her as a child in Midgar. And she's trying to find help for her dying mom, and it's like,
let's make the spoiler cut off specifically chapter 14. Chapter 13 is fine. And bit towards the end of chapter 13, even if I think that dungeon was dragging way too long, I did think that the flashback sequences were well done.
Yeah, they can do melodrama really well. It's like, you have a really, I guess it's almost an impossible task of recreating the great sad scenes of the PlayStation 1, even with all the hardware and voice acting and technology and everything they have here. It's like, you just can't quite do it again perfectly. You never can.
I feel much the same way. Like, again, you know, with the Palmer fight, like, it's just, it's one of those where, like, if it was any other place, it would probably be my favorite fight in the game. But no, I don't agree that Palmer wasn't set up, or, like, when I first played it, it seemed completely random, but then when you go back and then you see some of the scenes that set it up, I'm like, oh, okay. Again, I wish it wasn't here, but at least they did it. But,
Let's move on to another, or do you have another
thought
on this?
The Red 13 one.
Oh, yeah.
I just had the one with the Red 13 one. Yeah, okay. So with that one, like, Red 13 was my least favorite character in the original, because I didn't hate him. I didn't dislike him.
Uh-huh.
I just felt like he had absolutely zero personality, and the only time he had personality was in the Cosmo Canyon section, and then he may as well be gone from the rest of the story after that, right? And that is absolutely not the case this time. This time, Red 13 has a lot to do. He's a huge character. And I came to really enjoy him for the most part. But when his voice completely changes when they get to Cosmo Canyon, I don't know. I prefer the wise.
I like
wiser
the wise voice too, actually.
That one a little bit.
I mean, I was fine with the voice change, and it's also like a really great touch that after you've cleared that chapter, all the side quests involving Red 13 change. Like, if you do a side quest after that, not only does he have his teenager voice, anyone who refers to Red 13 by name, that line's redubbed. They call him the Naki.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't, like, do that on a system level. They still call him Red 13, where the entire party's calling him Nanaki, and I think you should just rename him.
I'm half expecting Part 3 to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be clear, they actually do that in the original Final Fantasy VII, where after Cosmo Canyon, all his dialogue changes. It's just that in the English version, like, the dialogue changes aren't really meaningful. Except for one line. There's only one line that's a meaningful change.
Yeah, it's basically impossible to evaluate those in the English PlayStation version because, it's not just an Anarchy Day flood. They completely fuck up the reveal that Reeve is Code Sith because what happens is that you see a meeting room and he accidentally says a line in Code Sith's accent. But Kate Sif doesn't have an accent in the English PlayStation version.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
The original translation is most of the reason why the story is exceedingly confusing in the PlayStation 1 version. And I guess they're trying to recreate that level of exceeding confusion with the ending, which we'll have to have a whole conversation about.
So, on that subject...
The Kate Sif reveal here was honestly probably a lot better. I mean, that scene is actually funny as hell, where like they cut to Reeve in his office and he's humming Kate Sif's theme while he edits the wanted posters.
Well, on that subject, right? Like, when they got to Nibelheim, so in the original, right, when you get to Nibelheim and they're like, wait, what the fuck? I thought this place burned down. And then all the villagers are like, yo, you're sick for saying the village has been burned down that you used to live here. And all that shit, right? In the original, that confused the fuck out of me. And I got to the end of the game not knowing how Nibelheim had not burned down. But this time, they don't do that anymore, right? They just say, oh, it was recreated, right?
They mention that everything's brand new.
They rebuilt it in the original as well, but this time they've clearly stated, like it's not even like in the original they pretended it never happened. In this, they're explicitly, oh, it got burnt down for reasons that we're not going to talk about. You know, it was fiends or something. It certainly wasn't a certain first-class soldier losing his shit. But then we bought the town, rebuilt it, and now it's a medical facility.
Well, it's also like, you know, what I found out was that you can actually, in the original, you can find a letter somewhere that says the town was recreated. So it's not like some reveal that is like lost to the player at any point. It's just that they're making it like more obvious this time because they knew that in the original it was kind of like a mind fuck that like isn't really paid off that well if you're not going out and looking for every single item in the village. So no, I actually, when I first found it, I found it in World Intel, right? You know, there's a World Intel thing that says, oh, by the way, Nibelheim was rebuilt. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, that's going to destroy the reveal for any new player because they're going to read this before they get there. And then I got there and then they revealed it immediately. I was like, oh, okay, never mind.
Like the main difference is that people outside of the party in 7 pretend that the burning down never happened and rebirth it. They're just completely open that Shinra rebuilt this town. They just don't go into why.
Yeah, there could be a kind of cool surreal quality that they've sort of lost, but it does make. I guess it makes more sense at this point that they wouldn't even try to hide something like that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I was going to say I have a topic that I want to get to, but I felt like you wanted to get to your topic first.
Well, I have a few other topics I've written down. What was your favorite side quest in this game that you've done?
Sweet. Okay. My favorite, right? So those who are longtime listeners of the podcast, I don't know how many of them you are. My number one request for 7 Remake, for the 7 Remake Part 2, has always been put Gambit in the game. And guess what?
No.
They put him in the game, but like in a completely different place. And you get to control a bunch of robots, and then they get to like fight these, you know. And I just think, oh, I love the shit out of that side quest.
This is a mini game where you have to go and defeat a slime in the middle of an arena, and you have programmable robots that you can spawn at 3 points around it in a giant triangular battle. And I guess it's kind of a strategy thing. You can auto set the strategy and set it to easy, at least by the point I got to it. I think they patched out a lot of minigames to have easy modes added into them. So I just did that and breezed right through it because I wanted nothing to do with that shit. It just seemed exceedingly unfun to me.
Oh, fair enough. But I was just like grinning the whole time. And that's my favorite minigame. That's my favorite side quest.
That's your favorite side quest and your favorite minigame.
Okay, alright. If they're different, then I'm going to say, alright, favorite minigame is that. Favorite side quest, I'm going to say, is the Tifa one where they're doing the frog minigame. I thought it was so charming.
Alright, I got worried. I thought you were going to take mine, my favorite side quest. Yeah, there's kids in Junon who are hanging around this industrial waste. That somebody on Twitter called like Final Fantasy VII's version of the elephant's foot from Chernobyl, and it transforms you magically into a frog, and then you got to play like what's that? It's like an indie game where you're knocking people off of a thing.
It was
Fall Guys. Fall Guys. Thank you. That's it. Yeah, you're Frog Fall Guys. Also, every character has their own unique frog character model.
Yeah.
Including Red 13.
They already had that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that the new characters they added have them too. I guess there must be one for Kate Sith, though I never got to see it.
Same, yeah. I never used Kate Sith, even though I like him now.
Never liked him, never
that's
will.
Fair.
I don't like his kit at all. I don't understand what the hell they're even going for. Okay, so I was talking about
boost your crit rate as much as possible, and then do insane damage based. Because Kate Sif is actually the second strongest attacker in both physical and magical.
What, really?
I'm not shocked.
Yeah,
I hate this. I hate these choices. My favorite mini game. No, my favorite side quest is this is a late game one. It is in Nibelheim, where you team up with Tifa and a lady from a Disney movie that sings songs.
Yes.
And you have to go find Fluffy, Tifa's white cat from... I don't think she's even in the original game. She might just be like from one of the novellas or something.
No, she's from Before Crisis.
Okay, yeah. So you find the kitty and she's had kittens. And you have to go protect them from killer bees, of all things. And then at the end of this... Tifa gets to play piano. She gets to play Aerith's theme on the piano, which is one of my favorite minigames, though not my favorite. And the entire town joins in to have an orchestra section. And all the kittens are just sitting around bopping to the music. And it is an all-timer great video game moment.
Oh, it's great. I love that minigame, too. That side quest, I should say. So, favorite minigame?
Oh, mine's Queen's Blade. I mean, we could have a whole podcast on Queen's Blade.
It has to be Queen's Blood, yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's not Queen... God damn it. I didn't even mean to do it as a joke. I mean, Queen's Blood. Queen's Blade is an ecchi anime that I may have watched too much of. No, Queen's Blood is the great card game that's in this game.
I did not enjoy it until I got into it.
Like, one of the actual funniest parts in this game is towards the end of the Queen's Blood story arc, where, like, you know, the story just immediately starts funneling down into this linear progression, and you go against who looks like is going to be the strongest Queen's Blood player in the world, and it's Vincent.
Yep.
I know, man.
It makes sense. All of the Queen's Blood players in this game are weird freaks. Like, you know, it's pretty obvious. Your party members play it. Chadley plays it.
Cloud plays it. Cloud is clearly a weird Cloud freak by the end of this game.
There's also stuff like the robot made to play card games.
The chocobo that plays it.
Yes, the chocobo that plays card games. Like even in the first town, the Queen's Blood players are... A guy who claims that crying increases his card playing skills. This woman who has holed herself up in a cardboard box fort.
Oh yeah, she gets so mad when you knock over her nonsense Havoc physics engine box fort.
And this little girl ventriloquist dummy, which was the first time that the translation of this game gave me a complete fucking sucker punch when you defeat her and she said, sometimes you just gotta take the L. The translation of this game has sucker punched me several times, by the way. Like, the death of Kate Sif number one manages to transform from maybe a somber moment to absolutely hilarious when Kate Sif starts talking about skipping leg day.
Yep. Kate Sif has got some big thighs, though. Some Color Mage, what was your favorite side quest?
As a quest, it's probably the cat one you brought up.
I'm sorry, I took
writing it. Writing-wise, the Red 13 Chicken quest
is
absolutely god-awful to play.
Fuck that fucking shit. I did not finish that.
The payoff is fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
This is...
We gave poor Red an existential crisis.
One thing we do need to say, I don't know if we made this clear, but just the fact that we have favorite side quests at all versus in Final Fantasy 16 where all the side quests were terrible. All the side quests in this game are roughly, they're all tied to a character in some way. So you get to learn something about the party and something about the world. They're all decent, at least mini stories, which is what a great side quest should be in a video game versus... Just waste my fucking time going to an area and fighting two things. And like, structurally, that's what a lot of this stuff is. But they add so much flavor and color and just weird, weird people in Yakuza-esque strangeness. There's a lot of diversity and wonder here.
Side quests in the series have kind of sucked since 12, to be honest.
Oh, actually, I did just think of another good good side quest. It's the one where Barrett is trying to help that children's author that he likes.
Yeah.
And so they go around Gongaga with Red 13 and take photos of him doing poses that are trying to encompass certain emotions and such.
Oh, I didn't get to.
One was cool too. So side quests in the series have kind of sucked since 12, to be honest. Like, they've just not been very fun, and they've been mostly like time wasting. So like 7 Remake was exactly the same way. There's not a single person who would say the side quests in 7 Remake were good. 15, the side quests in that game were not good. Like, I haven't played 16, so I can't comment. But this is the first game they've done in a long time where we've actually been like, oh, fuck yes, let's do the side quests, right? And they have this whole, like, affection mechanics thing, right? Which is a page, this is the first page I've written, right? On, you know, you can, like, get a max relationship score with every character, and there's so much that goes into it. Like, in the original, it's just a hidden mechanic, and it's based on dialogue choices. And the dialogue can give points to the different ones. And sometimes it doesn't make sense. Like, why does it make sense that when I say we gotta help Tifa, that Aerith gets +3? Whereas when I say we gotta help Aerith with Tifa, that's -3.
Like, I had that with this game too, where I had a conversation with Aerith in Nibelheim, where we're talking about creeping on Tifa through her window. And she asks if you did that as a boy, and you're like, well, I'm saying you as Cloud. I'm like, yes, I did. Because I'm like, oh, I want to max my affection with Tifa, and I want to tell Aerith, no, I'm not terribly interested. Instead, I got an entire, like, I went all the way up to blue with Aerith, which meant I couldn't do any of her side quests anymore until after the dating thing.
Yeah, that's 3 stars. That gives you 3 stars with Aerith. It's a weird choice, that one. But, they have this whole, like, affection mechanics thing. And it's a really, really good system, and I really like it, which makes me almost disappointed that the only thing it affects is the gold saucer dates, right? Because I feel like they could do this really cool thing like Mass Effect 2 does with the loyalty missions, where it actually like affects the ending based on how much loyalty you have with a certain party member. They can, like, you know, it affects whether they survive in the end or not. And I really think they could do something like that with Final Fantasy VII Revengeance or whatever.
Revenge, that's a good one.
I mean, we're running out of names for it. Like, it can't be Reunion because that's a Crisis Core remake. We can't use Reloaded because if they ever remake Dirge of Cerberus, they have to call it that.
Revolution. That's the other Matrix sequel. Recoded. Nope. Wait, that's a Kingdom Hearts game.
Remodeled.
Remodeled?
Final Fantasy VII Remodeled.
Final Fantasy VII.
You know, maybe they'll try to do something clever with it, because, like, yeah, this goes into our spoiler cutoff for this podcast, because we're not going to be able to discuss the ending in time. We've got like 10 minutes before I have to leave.
We have a hard out, so let's get to
the Rebirth actually makes a lot of sense considering something that happens during that final chapter.
Recurrence, that's what I'm gonna go with. They're gonna end up with three enough words. Like, it's gonna end up being like Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0, etc. the final thing I wanted to get to on my list of topics to talk about, who's your favorite character in this game? Either the play as or just like in general personality-wise.
Oh, I love that you asked that, because that was going to be my topic that I was going to bring up. But yeah, I love that. I'm going to say my favorite new character and my favorite original one, right? I've already said my favorite new one, it's Gus, right? Even though he's a piece of shit.
Party member.
Okay, so my favorite party member, right, is going to be Yuffie.
Yes.
I love Yuffie in this game, right?
Yeah, so Yuffie is still, like, the top-tier character, and it's great that, instead of trying to bring her down from her somewhat broken position in the Integrate, they're bringing everyone up to her level.
Yeah, I love it, man.
Her
like,
kit is so good in combat. It's wild.
Yeah, so obviously, like, you know, my favorite character overall was always going to be Tifa. Like, you know, it always was going to be, and of course it is, you know. Because I'm always going to like the monk characters best. You know, Sovereign's my favorite in 6. You know, I'm always going to like that character the best. But the one who surprised me the most for most improved over 7, and the one I enjoyed using the most, the one I enjoyed being around the most, the one who, like, just made me happy every single scene she was in, Yuffie was just phenomenal in this game, and her voice acting was great. I love when she sings her own theme. Like,
she sings the Chocobo, like, theme, too.
She sings the Chocobo theme, like... Yeah. Oh, so she's the one who I max second after yeah. Tifa, because I love Yuffie.
Also, the voice acting is so good and really helps sell her as, like, this shitty little teen she is.
It really does, right? Because
also apparently really sells her motion sickness, because there's been an interview with Suzy Young and she said that, like, yeah, the voice direction told me that, you know, I have to pretend being motion sick a few times, and after the first attempt, I was asked to tone it down a little because it was too realistic.
Yeah, she threw up, like, in the voice. Funny. The throw up noises she made were too good.
So it's like, you know, Yuffie in this one, like, in the original, like, she was... I couldn't stand Yuffie in the original, and I never included her in my party. Like, I just found her to be so annoying, so obnoxious, you know, like, every one of her lines just really annoyed me. And in this one, it's like, none of those traits changed, except that because of how she was voiced, it's like, instead, everything that made her annoying originally makes her really endearing this time around. It's like, oh, she's a little shit, but I'm rooting for her. You know, and
I think part of it is, like, not to say that Final Fantasy VII 1 is a funny game, but Rebirth, I think, is maybe the funniest thing that Square Enix has ever written.
Yes.
So her character fits really well in that kind of story.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, she is part of the, like, excitable girl character trope that runs through many, many Final Fantasy games, you know, like Realm and, of course, Yuffie, Selfie, Riku. I've never liked any of these characters, to be honest. But Yuffie in this game, I find she gets, like, the most screen time because she's always mugging at the camera.
I liked Riku in 10, I'll be honest. But yeah, I do agree with you that trope never normally works. Like, Aiko's the other one. Like, I never really liked that trope.
Fucking
vanilla,
man.
Yeah, I never, like, gelled well with it. But no, Yuffie... So, Yuffie is going to be my favorite in terms of, like, most improved from the original. I also feel... So, I've said earlier, Red 13, I think, was massively improved from the original. I like him now. I know you'll disagree with this, but I much prefer Kate Sith now. I think he was written a lot better this time. But, like, you know, so Yuffie has become easily my second favorite, right? She's ahead of Barrett now, you know, which is crazy, right? You know, so my top 5 is going to be Tifa, Yuffie, Barret, Aerith, Cloud. And that's insane. That's insane that Yuffie is so high up there. Because she just made me so happy every single scene she was in. Right? You know, so I'm going to be praising her through, like, and her voice acting, like, forever now. Because, you know, like, Tifa was great, but she was as good as she was in 7 Remake for me. Barret, he was great, and I feel like maybe it was hurt a little bit by the fact that, like, they did kind of fumble that scene, the dying scene, a little bit, but still felt
all
like
his other scenes
brilliant.
Are so good. Like, as a character, he is the voice of reason in this party. He is the one that's willing to speak up about Cloud's severe issues.
Absolutely.
He is also the brilliant. Most ardent leftist, and I love the fact that when he hears that there was a revolution in Wutai, he's like, hell yeah, revolutions, let's go.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I love that.
That's also stuff that we're going to have a lot to say on the part 2 of this podcast, but Wutai, there's a lot going on there for something that was skipped over for this game.
And Aerith is... Aerith, again, she was just as good as she was in 7 Remake for me. Like,
iconic.
There's one change to her. Yeah, there's one change where they said like she doesn't know the future anymore, which and when that came in, I was like, oh, okay. I was curious to see if we would learn more about that, but I guess we don't, right?
Yeah,
And
we this
but I'm
could be for
still
next
really
time.
like, yeah, that's a next time thing, but they do definitely provide a logical explanation for that one.
Agreed. Yeah. So yeah, I think like Yuffie most improved. And Tifa favorite overall. So sorry, someone else. I've talked too much. Someone
Right.
else favorite character.
So I'm gonna say like I think every character is greatly improved over the original or even remake, both as having character moments and also in gameplay. Everyone feels really good to play. So like when I say Yuffie is my favorite character to play as, that's still like not much over most other things. Similarly, when I say that Red 13 is my least favorite character to play, that's still not by much. It's just that I really do not gel with his block heavy play style.
Yeah, that's my problem with Cloud too, is that I in this game, like, you can hit block, and yes, it gives you ATB, but you could also dodge, and dodge means no damage at all, which is just
Yeah, and
clearly
also
better.
If you block at the right time.
I have also dodged so much more in Rebirth than I have in Remake
Well, it actually works.
because of Cloud's moveset, because that is how Cloud switches to aerial combat in this game. He has to dodge. And
Oh yeah, him and Yuffie both get a ranged attack after you dodge.
yeah, but with Yuffie it doesn't matter that much because she still has the throw catch from Remake.
Oh yeah. Oh, yep. Yes.
And yeah, like it's hard to like draw a line. Like even personality wise, it's hard to draw a favorite because I mean, as pointed out by Techno, I don't hate Yuffie, I don't hate Kate Sif. No one else was ever that bad in the original. I'm going to find this interesting in part three because while Cid will inevitably be toned down because a lot of his worst aspects were translation issue, in Rebirth we have been acquainted to his nice side first, and when Shearer inevitably show when the whole Rocket Town sequence happens, we are inevitably going to have to take a look at his nastier side.
I love
I
Cid's
bet they just
accent, by
cut
the way.
that, honestly. He had that
I love
accent in
Cid.
Kingdom Hearts too. He had kind of a southern accent.
And it's cool because I live in southern US now and I like know a lot of people around that, so it endears me to Cid even more now.
Vincent may not be a party member in this game, but I love him.
Yes, I'm very excited to play as him.
His introduction where he's trying to be serious but can't figure out how to use a card reader and Kate Sif has to help him out. And like throughout chapter 12 and chapter 13, he doesn't really do anything. You can just see him find him hiding at every port. He's just so funny.
Him showing up at the end of the Queen's Blood side quest to go
Yes,
and do some Yu-Gi-Oh shit.
yes. Like, oh God. Like, it's so hard to choose the best character, man.
They really did a great job of every single one of these people. Even, and like, I'll admit, like, Red 13 is a character that genuinely I could forget about if I'm talking about Final Fantasy VII. I'll talk about friggin', I'll talk about Mr. Coates before I talk about Red 13. I'll talk about Bugenhagen before I talk about Red 13. I'm sorry to say. But in this game, they did a lot
Oh,
of good
I love
work making him a character. And I just love that in many locations you go to, because he's a dog, all the children NPCs are like, "Yay, dog! We want to go hang with him."
Right.
He's a fun animal character.
So is he going to be your favorite then?
No, my favorite's Yuffie.
Okay,
Honestly,
fair enough.
I kind of wish I'd done Yuffie's date because I think her date might be the best one. The
It
only problem
is,
with that
yeah.
is I've always been a Claudie stan all the way to the beginning. That's Cloud Tifa, right? Claudie.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. I've always believed that's in that one. Cool. I've always thought that the arguments, even in Advent Children, as to whether or not Cloud was with Tifa or Aerith were ridiculous and sort of heteronormative in a weird way. Some color mage, you're at your heart out, right?
Yeah, well,
okay.
I maybe have a couple more minutes, but we should just wrap up.
Yeah, we should just wrap up. So, in the next week or two, we're going to reconvene and have a bonus podcast, because Chapter 14 is, it's a wallop of decisions, let's say. And
even though we did skimp on some other big story details.
There's a ton of story details we can get to. This is an enormous game. Like, we could do podcasts about this for, I think, the rest of the year. And
it's not even just, you know, talking about the ending. I want to talk about where I think future chapters are going.
Yes.
I have a lot of ideas. I have some cursed lines that I must speak out loud and make Blue hate me for saying.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk Cosmo Canyon as well, because I have thoughts on that. That was my second favorite part of the original. And I have thoughts on how they did it this time.
I have to complain about the Gee tribe fucking destroying me in Cosmo Canyon in random encounters and driving me completely nuts.
Oh, and Costa del Sol. I love that scene. I want to talk about that too. Yeah, there's just so much.
There's so much. We really needed like a 6-hour podcast. So we will reconvene in the next week or two to have Final Fantasy VII-2. Final Fantasy VII-2-2. Is how this is going to be. So, in the meantime, this has been the Final Fantasy Wiki podcast. We're the official podcast of the Final Fantasy Wiki. I am your host and producer and other things. My name is Blue Highwind. The podcast music is La Montaña de los Jóvenes Caballeros, which is the Mount Colts music from Final Fantasy VI. And that's off the OC remix Balance of Ruin. Expert Novice made that music. I don't know if they even know that this has been used for this podcast for the last few years, but thank you for letting us use it. Anyway, I'm feeling very excited and chipper, and I'm so glad that everyone loved this game. Like, I have a ton of energy right now, but I say this at the end of every podcast, so I'm going to say it this time too. I'm going to go to sleep.